Welcome back to the Brittany Hughes Show. So Florida is having a very interesting week, of course, as Hurricane Ian bears down on it. We are staying on top of that. Obviously, our prayers go out to everybody in Florida. If you have family or friends in Florida, if you live in Florida, we are praying for you. And there is just no shortage of organizations and charities that I know are scrambling to help out, not just in the immediate, but also in the aftermath. So, but disgustingly, one of the worst aspects that's come out this week about this hurricane is that the left has immediately seized on a disaster that's going to harm people, threaten lives, destroy property, and it's being politicized and weaponized to try to make a ridiculous point about their green agenda. It took about 2 seconds for this thing to pop up on the radar before leftists were hemming and hawing about how this was yet another example about unchecked climate change. And, you know, if it weren't for those dirty, rotten conservatives stymieing us at every single turn and not letting us throw even more gobs of cash at these green agenda items, we wouldn't be having hurricanes if they would just get out of the way and stop denying the science. Senator Amy Klobuchar. Senator Amy Klobuchar up from Minnesota literally saying that if we would just elect Democrats and support their multi-trillion dollar climate policies, we wouldn't be seeing hurricanes like this.
And two, you've got leaders in Congress like Senator Schumer and Speaker Pelosi, as well as their Republicans that want to work with them, where we have been able to step by step by step push these bills through. And so I think so many times people counted us out, but we want to make clear we've got the backs of the American people. And while we have clear disagreements, we don't want, if the Republicans take charge, a number of them have been talking about an abortion ban. You guys know that. You featured on the show. That's why we've got to win this midterm. We just did something about climate change for the first time in decades. That's why we've got to win this as that hurricane bears down on Florida. We got to win in the midterms. We understand that. But none of that has stopped us from deciding we're going to put our differences aside and get some things done. That is what that vote is today in the Rules Committee, where you're going to see a strong bipartisan support, a very good hearing for changes to the Electoral Count Act.
The arrogance of a statement like that. Okay, I know that the left already purports to be able to control everything. They want to control, you know, the entire economy. They want to control the energy industry. They want to control all of education. They want to control healthcare. They want to control your money and your wallet. They want to control private businesses. The left wants to control everything, even to the point of genuinely thinking that they can control the weather. We're not even talking about climate at this point. We're not talking about the overall state of, you know, the carbon dioxide atoms in the atmosphere and all of the chemicals that make up the planet and how those are fluctuating or not fluctuating over time. We're literally talking about individual weather patterns that have happened for eons. Like hurricanes in Florida are some new phenomenon. It's the same exact thing that they do every single time California has a wildfire because they don't take care of their freaking forest beds. And every time, you know, somebody lights a match or a lightning strike comes down or, you know, Smokey the Bear's not there to tell you to put out your campfire or, you know, a butterfly rubs its wings together too fast. Every single time that happens, half of California lights up like a tinderbox. And we're told that it must be because of climate change. Never mind that some of the worst forest fires in California history happened eons ago. Never mind that we go through some years where it's not nearly as bad and some years where it seems to be worse. Again, a lot of this depending on how the forests are upkept, or rather not upkept. It doesn't matter. We're going to throw out all of that information. We're going to throw out all of the data. We're going to throw out all of the actual trends. We don't want people to look at that. We don't want people to look at the actual trends of hurricanes in Florida, blizzards in the Northeast, tornadoes in Oklahoma. We're going to just trust us and trust the narrative that if something like this happens, it must be because of climate change. It must be because we didn't elect the right people. We didn't throw enough money at the problem. The astounding arrogance that it takes not only to postulate that a political party can impact the weather and stop hurricanes, but the arrogance that it takes to politicize a disaster like this even before it has occurred. If a hurricane is about to hit a state, and the only thing that you can think of to say is, well, y'all just didn't elect the right people. There's another election coming up. Make sure you vote the right way. You are a garbage person. And yet the mainstream media has picked that narrative up, hook, line, and sinker. Over at CNN, Don Lemon, who recently got demoted from his 10 p.m. slot and is now doing a morning show that pretty much nobody watches, Don Lemon tried desperately, desperately this week to tie Hurricane Ian to climate change, even when he was shot down by one of the top hurricane experts in the country. Check this out.
Can you tell us what this is and what effect climate change has on this phenomenon?
Well, we can come back and talk about climate change at a later time. I want to focus on the here and now. We think the rapid intensification is probably almost done. There could be a little bit more intensification as it's still over the warm waters of the eastern Gulf of Mexico, but I don't think we're going to get any more rapid intensification. If you look here, you can actually see, pretty interesting for your viewers, you can actually see a second eye wall forming around the inner eye wall, and that's basically the second eye wall has overtaken the original eye wall, and that should arrest development.
I'm just trying to get that. You said you want to talk about climate change, but what effect does climate change have on this phenomenon that is happening now? Because it seems these storms are intensifying. That's the question
here. I don't think you can link climate change to any one event. Okay. On the whole, on the cumulative, climate change may be making storms worse, but to link it to any one event, I would caution against that.
Okay. Well, listen, I grew up there, and these storms are intensifying. Something is causing them to intensify. So this storm is just, it's a massive one. Its effects are also being felt in the southern part of Florida. What about the areas that may not be taking a direct hit or experiencing the storm surge, like on the West Coast? How much will the rest of the state be impacted?
Yeah, that's actually a good question, because we flip out to this other graphic. You can see this orange area is the size. So if you think about how big the wind field is, and you can just see how big that wind field is relative to traditional hurricanes. And as that moves up and over the Florida Peninsula into the southeast United States, you can see this big area, blue area of tropical storm warnings.
Okay, so who you saw him talking to there was NOAA's Hurricane Center Director Jamie Rome, who, as you can see, to his credit, refused to blame one storm on climate change, saying, look, we can talk about climate change. If you want to talk about kind of overarching trends and whatever, we can have that discussion. But to sit there on the eve of a hurricane hitting Florida, when people have just waited in long lines to try to get gas and water and milk and whatever else to try to ride out this storm, and to try to tie it to climate change and to try to pinpoint the blame for a hurricane in Florida, which has happened for forever, to climate change, is nonsensical. And yet that's all we have seen the left do this entire week. Now, I think that a really good reason for why the left is so desperate to make sure that this particular hurricane, of all storms, of all the things happening around the world, we're gonna pick this hurricane and make sure that we tie it to climate change, is because Florida has a governor that the leftists in this country cannot stand. Ron DeSantis is way on their bad side. If there's somebody that's on their bad side nearly as much as Donald Trump, it's going to be Ron DeSantis, with his pro-parental rights and education bill, with how he pushed back on COVID policies that were absolutely decimating businesses and people. And he said, no more. I'm not going to do this anymore. And the left absolutely hates him. And I think what you're seeing is a narrative being strung together even before the hurricane hits. The left and their media hacks have already made up their mind. They are hoping for as much destruction as possible so that they can weaponize this and blame it on the supposed failure of a governor that they've already decided that they don't like. And what's interesting is that you never see them actually pointing to any data to support the claim that he or Republicans or conservatives or climate change skeptics or whatever have caused this hurricane in particular, since they're pinpointing on this one, to hit the coast of Florida, and yet they're going to run with the narrative that this must be because of climate change, regardless of whether or not there's any actual science to back that up. So let's talk about whether or not there's science to back that up. So here to talk with me a little bit about this issue is my good friend Gardner Goldsmith. So Gard writes for us over at MRC TV, but that is not nearly all he does. He is an author. He is a lecturer. He is an expert on political economics. All of you, Gard, you're all the things. You're just all the things. But one thing that you have done a lot of extensive research on over many years, I know, is researching not only climate change and the entire boondoggle that goes along with that, but also how it intersects with politics, economics, and kind of the political discourse here, which I think is very, very important. And the reason that I bring that up is I think that one of the biggest misconceptions among many on the left, so we're not even just talking about the movers and shakers, the lawmakers, I'm talking about just kind of your average left-leaning person, this idea that they hold a monopoly on science and on degrees and on hefty resumes, and that conservatives that don't buy into this global apocalyptic notion and all of the big government solutions that go along with it that are supposed to save us from it, that we're just a bunch of like hapless rubes and that we are clinging, you know, to the Constitution in one hand and our plastic straws in the other, and we're just burying our head in the sand, completely unwilling to look at the facts and the science. And I find that very interesting because, and I don't want to speak for you, but I think you would agree, I am all for taking action to save lives based on science. I mean, this is something that pro-lifers do for unborn children every single day. Now, we may disagree as a society about what exact actions to take, but if there is something that the science points to that says we are doing that we could do better or that we need to change in order to save lives, I'm all for that. I think you're all for that. I think most conservatives are all for that. But the science does not support the claim that hurricanes and other natural disasters, like, you know, California wildfires, for example, are necessarily being fueled by man-made climate change. What have you found?
Well, you know, I'm really glad that you bring it up, Brittany, because this has been a long-term gaslighting program on the part of so many of these people. You know, it was one of the earliest examples of them claiming the science, even as they were adjusting their data to fit their apocalyptic claims, because the data was not bearing out their claims. So one of the things that I bring up for people is all you have to do, if you really want a quick, easy first point, reference point to start on this journey to see how they've been so manipulative for their political gain, for climate taxes, carbon taxes, further regulations, further handouts to their friends in political positions, and further aggrandizing in an anti-constitutional manner, is just look at the graph that Al Gore features in his film An Inconvenient Truth. That was the graph that was created by a Pennsylvania professor named Michael Mann many years ago, and they call it the hockey graph because and anybody who knows anything about history knows that if you look at this graph, it looks like back in history, back to the 1600s, 1700s or so, things were fairly cool. And then all of a sudden, everything seems to shoot up, and it's consistent with the rise of the internal combustion engine. Whoa, what? So clearly it gives people a visual representation of some message they would like to impart. But if you were to expand the graph back in time a little further, you would see what they called the medieval warming period, which was the period when the Vikings had lived in Iceland. They grew crops there. It wasn't icy and temperatures were much higher. So that itself shows you that they're not dealing with the audience honestly, because they're not taking that into account. And then if you zoom in on that graph, you'll even see that the assumptive properties of their demonstration of this relationship between carbon dioxide measured in isotopes in ice samples that they get, that they assume represent the amount of carbon dioxide that was in the atmosphere, with a correspondent increase in temperature years later, that isn't even supported by their own graph, because the temperature rises actually occur years before the carbon dioxide measurement rises. So they've got it backwards. And then there's all sorts of stuff that indicate to us that they're not playing honestly with us, whether it's the fact that, for example, when the Soviet Union collapsed, there were a bunch of Russian Siberian temperature reading stations that no longer got their central bank money. They closed those down. Those data points were no longer being fed into ground-based temperature readers. But the people at the IPCC, the International Panel for Climate Change within the UN, and the people at people like Michael Mann, people at the University of East Anglia, who were connected with what's called ClimateGate, where they revealed emails where they actually talked about manipulating the data to fit their climate apocalypse fears or predictions. If you look at how they did not compensate for the fact that those relatively colder temperatures were no longer part of the large data set, that again tells you, look, even if you don't have a political agenda, if you're just trying to deal with science and it has nothing to do with policy, if you were just talking about the births and deaths of frogs that you liked or cats, or if you were talking about cooking recipes or some other thing that where you can have measurements, you wouldn't trust these people. Because they don't deserve your trust. And yet they're the ones who are getting your tax money all the time. And we see it now with this hurricane argument. It's incredible.
Yeah, so I think that's one of the most disgusting parts and one of the most frustrating parts about this whole entire debate is it's one thing to debate numbers. It's one thing to point out different sides of an argument when it comes to science, because, again, we're constantly learning, right? We're constantly to not be open to new information would be ridiculous. I don't think anybody in their right mind is trying to shut down a discussion on this, but it seems like the left wants to paint this narrative that if you don't buy into our, if you don't buy into our description, if you don't buy into our little data set that we want to present, if you don't buy into our interpretation of this, you are directly responsible for things like Hurricane Ian devastating Florida, which I find very interesting. So I was listening to a podcast because I don't claim to be an environmentalist. I don't claim to be a scientist. So instead, I listen to people that are, right? People that might have a depth of knowledge on this subject. And one of the places that I was pointed was actually a recent podcast on Dan Crenshaw's podcast, of all people, where he had Stephen Koonin on. He's a theoretical physicist, and he was actually the undersecretary for science at the Department of Energy in the Obama administration. Okay, so this isn't like some Yahoo, and actually worked under Obama from 2009 to 2011. And the reason that I bring him up was he had an absolutely fascinating take on the climate science, which in his own admission is really difficult to put your finger on because there are so very many factors that play into what we call climate, which is very distinguishable from what we refer to as weather, which I think is something that leftists like to tie into climate change. Oh my gosh, we're going to blame this one storm on climate change. And his point was, look, even if climate is fluctuating in an overall sense, first of all, that's very natural. If you look back at data from eons ago, we're not even, you know, you can't just trace it back to Al Gore and when he decided that he needed something to make him famous other than inventing the internet. Those fluctuations are not only natural, but go back way before the industrial age, go back way before we were all pumping gas into our, you know, internal combustion engines and heating our homes with, you know, coal, which, by the way, also is what powers your Prius and your Tesla, if you happen to have one of those. If you look back at hurricanes, if you look back at all of these natural disasters that the left loves to blame on climate change, for example, just a cursory search, The Treasure Coast hurricanes of 1715 and 1733, so we're talking about a hot minute ago, right? Way before Henry Ford, wrecked 11 Spanish ships as they were setting sail from Florida back to Spain, absolutely decimated the Florida coast. The Great Hurricane of 1780 still remains the deadliest Atlantic hurricane on record. It left behind 22,000 fatalities across the Caribbean. So if you go back and you look at climate science, if you go back and you look at history, the idea that, you know, the only thing that ever hit Florida were Cat 2s, and now all of a sudden we've got a Cat 5 pounding the coast every 2 weeks, and it's all because of you dirty, rotten climate deniers and your, you know, F-350s, is absolutely ridiculous. So you have to say, if the science does not support this doomsday scenario, if the science does not back this up, the only plausible explanation left for why left-wing lawmakers and, you know, the people that rake in all of this money, the only plausible explanation for them to do this is, like I said, money and control. Those are the only reasons. So talk a little bit about how you know the climate change town criers are using this to their own end, and that's to seize more control over different sectors of our economy, our energy sector, and it has nothing at all to do with actually saving humanity from coming doom.
A really, really good way to approach this, Brittany. I really appreciate this. You know, on the general view of this, there's a really good book called Unstoppable Global Warming Every 1500 Years. It was written years ago, and it shows that the strongest thing that you can find that is correlated to changes in temperature, and even that specifically, it's very difficult. If we're talking about adjusting the carbon in the atmosphere by X amount, and that will have this amount of change. I almost went to school for astrophysics. I was really interested in cosmology, and I was a big fan of Carl Sagan as a kid, and I understood the Venusian, the Venus atmosphere, and they used to talk about the greenhouse effect. But it doesn't apply to the United States because we have natural phenomenon that utilize the carbon that on Venus with carbon dioxide gets trapped there, and they don't have things that will use it to actually grow. They don't have oceans that recycle these things. And so you can look at the most correlated thing to temperature changes, if you look at the cycles, seem to be solar activity periods. Higher activity periods, you get warm. Lower activity periods, you get cold. And the fact that you won't get people on the other side to debate this, I think, is very telling. And it shows us that there seems to be a political end to this. And we clearly can see that it's starting to manifest itself in policy, and they will use almost any excuse and overlook almost any detail because they just don't want people to talk about these details. So let's just go into a couple things that will, in addition to that unstoppable global warming every 1500 years that they might want to look up, or climate change, ClimateGate 1 and 2 and the University of East Anglia, if they want to look up Michael Mann. Of course, they're going to have to be careful. The search engines that they use nowadays, they can go to MRCTV and see some of our pieces by putting those terms inside our search engines. But here's one, hurricane season 2022. This is just the most recent one from Fox News. August finishes without any named storms for the first time in decades. Let's head on over here to Climate Depot. This one from 2021. Unprecedentedly few. 2021 had the fewest global hurricanes in the satellite era and second fewest strong hurricanes since 1980. And that satellite point is a very, very important one. Here's another one from the Christian Science Monitor from 2015. Hurricane Danny fizzles. Why are there fewer big hurricanes? And it turns out the U.S. is in a historic hurricane drought, according to NOAA's Climate Prediction Center. The fading of Hurricane Danny, which peaked as a Category 3 storm over the Atlantic, came as no surprise Saturday. And they go into some of this information. One of the things that I think is very important for people to keep in mind, I have a cat meowing in the background there, is that they will use even fewer storms as an excuse to say, well, this indicates that there's climate change. The satellite information is extremely important, because if you look at the satellite information, you'll see that you're getting different numbers than the temperature readers that they keep on the ground, that they have moved on the ground. And even Rush Limbaugh, you know, he used to talk about this a long time ago. They move them on the ground towards areas that are warmer so that they can manipulate the data sets. In fact, I remember a couple of years ago hearing an interview with someone from NOAA, and he was saying, well, our ocean temperature readers aren't getting the data that we really need. So we're going to move them from lower areas in the ocean to higher areas in the ocean. In other words, they're going to try to shoot towards an end that they want, which is warmer temperatures being read. And this leads to policy. This leads to things like what they have done in Europe, which is to try to get rid of natural gas, to try to get rid of oil, what they have done in Sri Lanka, getting rid of natural gas. And all of these things make it more difficult for people to be able to do what they want to do at lower expense. And of course, they start to manipulate the market towards the people who are the political favorites. I think it's just it's a terrible thing to consider that, for example, they'll use a hurricane like what's happening with Ian in Florida, and already they're blaming it on climate change. So their answer, of course, is to, what do they want to do? They want to make sure that they can keep carbon low, that they can apply more carbon taxes, that they can apply more green technology and so on. But here's the thing. If you are making it more expensive for people to live their lives, whether it be in the third world where Barack Obama told people in Africa that, well, everybody can't have air conditioning or else the world will blow up. If you're making it more expensive for people to live their lives, you'll find that, for example, when a hurricane comes, homes aren't built as well. They haven't been able to devote resources to building stronger homes, to having an infrastructure that can go in and clean up. And if everybody's on an electric grid, what happens when you have a massive hurricane that shuts down the electric grid? How are you going to get portable energy to go to these places for the backhoes and the bulldozers and the trucks and the firefighters? Where's that all going to come from? These people are insane. They're out of their minds. And I have no idea why they're trying to do this, but they are trying to do this all over the place to try to set everybody on an electric grid, which, as you say, is going to be powered by natural gas or coal, because wind and solar can't do the job, but they will have control over that grid. And I think that's one of the things they're shooting for. And it sounds conspiratorial, but if you look at what they're doing in New Jersey, you look at what Gavin Newsom is doing in California. They've got 9 governors in the northeastern region that have all signed on to climate credit changing, where they're calling it free market, that they can assign climate credit taxes to people and businesses, and then they'll be able to trade them. And that's a free market? That's ridiculous. That's like saying you can trade off the punches from the bully in the schoolyard. He's already assigning you a punishment. And now he's saying, oh, but you have the freedom to go and I'll go punch the other guy. It's insane.
But I think you pointed out that it sounds conspiratorial, and maybe it does, but I don't think that it's conspiratorial at all. And here's why I say that. And at the risk of jumping down a rabbit hole here, I don't want to go too far into this because it's a discussion for another time and we don't have the time to get totally into it. But I do think if there was one benefit to the COVID pandemic that we got to see, it was that the proverbial mask was ripped off of the government's response and their purposes in how they dealt with that crisis, if you can even call it one, a crisis that that was bolstered, at least in part, by the government's botched response to it. Here you had, hey, we're doing all of this for public health. We're trying to help people not get sick and make sure that they obey all of our rules so that everybody stays healthy. And you ended up creating a crisis of a different sort. You had a mental health crisis. You had a physical health crisis. People couldn't go to the doctor. They couldn't get their preventive care. People were left eating crappy food because they were unemployed and they couldn't buy nutritionally sound food. You trigger a domino effect that ends up causing the same, if not a worse problem than the one you say you were trying to prevent in the first place, as you just pointed out, with this ridiculously nonsensical approach to the energy sector. And okay, so now we're all just supposed to trade off coal, which powers like 80% of the planet, and we're all going to what, just depend on wind turbines and the sun when it happens to shine that day. And again, I think that it goes back to exactly what we saw during COVID, exactly what we see whenever the government comes up with a doomsday scenario, preying on the fear of people and comes in purporting to protect everybody. Essentially, what it comes down to is money and control. We're going to take control over this. We're going to start seizing sectors of, you know, different industries of the economy. We're going to start taking it over. I remember, I will never forget, at the beginning of the COVID pandemic, Hillary Clinton coming out and saying, look, people are starting to realize why they need government. And I thought, if that is not a perfect encapsulation of all of this, it's trying to get people to believe, to buy into, you cannot run your life yourself. You need the government and all of the people who get rich off of it to protect you. Just trust us. And the media, I think, is being incredibly complicit. If you look at the purpose of the media, it's to push back on that, right? It's to, okay, let's look at this with some skepticism. Let's dig into this a little bit. The media seems to not only have jumped full sail into this climate change hysteria, but if you look at the clip from Don Lemon, where he is trying desperately, and in the NOAA director's defense, he at least pushed back on it, but Don Lemon is trying desperately to link this hurricane, before it has even made landfall on Florida, to climate change, almost as if he's like titillated by this Hollywood-esque doomsday scenario. It almost feels as if pundits like Don Lemon are almost hoping for some cataclysmic event that harms people in order to wag his finger in somebody's face and say, here, look, I told you so. Do you get this sense?
Yeah, I feel, you know, it's funny, Brittany. I was speaking with someone yesterday, a radio host, and I said, you know, throughout American history, the U.S. Constitution has had to fight against generation upon generation of opportunists, whether they're in the media or they're in politics or they're the media people supporting the politicians or ideologically or for whatever reason. And I would argue that even under Alexander Hamilton, the people who brought in the Constitution, many of those people were sort of opportunists as well. And some of the folks who backed the Articles of Confederation saw the Constitution as a bit of a major usurpation. And so what I find is that these things tie together. And so they can serve their agenda to try to fearmonger about a virus and about a so-called pandemic, the definition of which has been manipulated for many years through the World Health Organization. And where we know the statistics behind that pandemic were inflated, most likely inflated because the U.S. government was handing money to hospitals about the COVID thing so that, as Deborah Birx said, we can call people who died with COVID, people who died from COVID. So all of that is very slippery stuff. It aggrandizes government. They fearmonger. And to me, and this goes towards my teaching in philosophy, you remember how Plato wanted the guardians? That's Anthony Fauci. It's a very hermetic thing. Hermeticism, and this goes way back in history. Plato was a big fan of Pythagoras. And he thought that based on Pythagoras's concept of geometry, that there was, you know, there were solid concepts that you could derive through thinking. He thought you could apply that to politics, making people live the best way, that you could have an ideal form of government and only the best people could run it. People like Anthony Fauci, right? Now, if you take that, at a certain point, Plato even said that the philosophers, the philosopher kings, would be so wise that they would even know the best kind of bed, that the market couldn't figure it out. It would be up to the philosopher kings. Now, take Don Lemon, take Prime Minister's leader Ardern, and they are combining their concept that they know what is best about the environment. They've got their handle on the science, just like they supposedly had their handle on the science for the pandemic, so-called. They've got their handle on the climate change science. You can't question it. You're a denier. And you're risking everybody else if you don't act now, even though every time they say you don't act now, they got to keep pushing it back. And she has actually, they're tying that into free speech, where they're saying you can't question. She's literally saying climate propagandists out there. She's calling skeptics the climate propagandists.
So just so we're clear, just to make sure that our viewers and our listeners understand, you're talking about the New Zealand Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, and she recently gave a big spiel in front of the United Nations, which should probably tell you everything that you need to know right there, but basically about how free speech on the internet is a weapon of war, and that global leaders should shut it down and essentially make sure that the only thing that gets out there is information that is government approved, because everything else, any dissent, anything that doesn't go along with that, is a weapon that is then used to, you know, oppress and disenfranchise and all of these ugly things that she likes to paint this picture. So we're going to go ahead and play a little snippet from her speech and then talk about that, because I think you bring up a really good point here. So we're going to get to that in just a second.
This week we launched an initiative alongside companies and nonprofits to help improve research and understanding of how a person's online experiences are curated by automated processes. This will also be important in understanding more about mis- and disinformation online, a challenge that we must, as leaders, address. Sadly, I think it's easy to dismiss this problem as one in the margins. I can certainly understand the desire to leave it to someone else. As leaders, we're rightly concerned that even the most light-touch approaches to disinformation could be misinterpreted as being hostile to the values of free speech that we value so highly. But while I cannot tell you today what the answer is to this challenge, I can say with complete certainty that we cannot ignore it. To do so poses an equal threat to the norms we all value. After all, how do you successfully end a war if people are led to believe the reason for its existence is not only legal, but noble? How do you tackle climate change if people do not believe it exists? How do you ensure the human rights of others are upheld when they are subjected to hateful and dangerous rhetoric and ideology? The weapons may be different, but the goals of those who perpetuate them is often the same: to cause chaos and reduce the ability of others to defend themselves, to disband communities, to collapse the collective strength of countries who work together. But we have an opportunity here to ensure that these particular weapons of war do not become an established part of warfare. In these times, I'm acutely aware of how easy it is to feel disheartened. We are facing many battles on many fronts, but there is cause for optimism, because for every new weapon we face, there is a new tool to overcome it. For every attempt to push the world into chaos is a collective conviction to bring us back to order. We have the means. We just need the collective will.
Okay, so essentially what she's saying here is if the government doesn't approve it, if and by extension, if the left doesn't approve it, if this is dissenting speech, it is a weapon that's being used against people. Literally the fact that you and I are even having this discussion, that we're even putting these ideas out there and that people can listen to them, and I don't care, whatever, go over to the most you know, climate change pushing website that you can find and read what they have to say and listen to what they have to say. That's the entire point, right? Do your research and figure out where you stand. But the fact that we are even presenting this information to people for consideration, she believes should be shut down. And I would postulate that any claim, anybody who claims anything to you, if they tell you that that's the only claim that you should ever be allowed to hear, you should immediately be skeptical of it, because if they were bringing truth to the table, why are they so afraid of debate?
Exactly. And this is where it made me immediately think of Plato and his philosopher kings saying that they will decide for everybody what the best form of bedness is. Literally, there's an abstract truth of the best type of bed. It's not you in the consumer market and the people who build the beds who can actually experiment and discuss and debate what you like best for your own preference. And this is where we get into what they're trying to do with speech. Really, if we think about it, where are you going to be able to reliably turn to get the best experimentation and some sort of, a test to figure out what is valid or not valid information from the authority that simply tells you this is what it is and you can't question it, or from the marketplace where you can experiment and you can get opinions from people? And this is exactly the opposite. This whole appeal to authority thing that they have been doing started with climate. Then we saw, years ago, and then we saw them shift over into the pandemic stuff, where clearly now you and I know, Brittany, how many times have we had those people at you know what guard, news blank, come and attack us because of things we've been saying, or we've been questioned by YouTube with things that we said almost 2.5 years ago now about Cowabunga 19, right? And yet we have been proven correct every time. And yet they're the ones who claim authority.
It doesn't fit the narrative.
It's insufferable. And it is, they're not going to stop. And people like Don Lemon, they think they're going to get their bread buttered by folks like the New Zealand Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern. And what they don't understand is, even if they try to stop the flow of information, they won't be able to stop it, because truth has its way of resonating with people. And even if I can't convince everybody, if I can convince one person to check stuff out, that's good enough for me,
And I think that we saw that with COVID. I think that that people, it wasn't like people just came out and immediately started saying, look, I don't believe this and this is all a bunch of bunk. I think that people started looking at the numbers and they started looking at their own lives and they simply wanted to do their own research. I mean, Don Lemon even back then was slamming people who, what you think you can go online and do your own research. Well, actually, yeah, I do. I think that's exactly what we can do. I think that's exactly what a free society should be able to do. And I will say, though, I'm not going to lie, if there were a philosopher king that could tell me what's the best bed, I might would go for that. I'm getting old. Okay. Like I might would take that. I don't, the climate thing we can debate, the COVID thing we can debate a lot of things, but if you can point me to the absolute top of the tier best bed ever, I might would actually take you up on that. Gardner Goldsmith, everybody, he writes for us over at MRC TV. Head on over there and check out all of his stuff. He is a wealth of information when it comes to this and all kinds of other topics. Gard, thank you so very much for being here. I'm going to have you back on soon, buddy, because we could talk all day. And that's the Brittany Hughes Show for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. Fascinating discussion. Love having Gard on whenever he's got the time. Make sure that you head on over to iTunes, hit the subscribe button, and never miss an episode of the Brittany Hughes Show again. You can also find full episodes on Facebook, YouTube, Rumble. You can check out our Instagram reels for shorts, pretty much anywhere that you get your podcasts. So thank you so much for joining me. Have a fantastic weekend. If you are in Florida, make sure that you try to stay safe. We are praying for you. We're praying for all of our friends and families down there. God bless, and I'll see you back here next week.